I'm Dean Tresk. You're listening to Ideas and Thoughts from NetTech, episode 28, telling the new story 1 year later. I've been really looking forward to this podcast. 1 year ago, I thought it would be really nice to work with David Warlick's idea of the new story of teaching and learning, and I brought together Kathy Cassidy, Darren Kuropatra, and Clarence Fisher, who I truly believe are three of the finest educators, especially in regards to the way they use technology in their classroom. And they range from Kathy being a grade 1 and 2 teacher to Clarence being a middle school teacher and Darren teaching high school mathematics. And they continue to demonstrate their fine work through their weblogs and through the work of their students. And I just had a great time last year talking to them. And, of course, I talked to all three of them throughout the year. But I thought it would be great to bring them together again in one spot and have them share together what they're doing in their classrooms and how they're growing as teachers and the new things that they're doing and the exciting projects they're involved in. So even though this is over an hour long, it's worth it. You'll want to listen to it. We laugh. We just have a great time with each other. And more importantly, we do, or they, I should say, share just some of the outstanding work they're doing, and I think you'll be inspired by it. So have a listen, and please leave a comment on the blog about the teachers, and then go visit their websites and see the good things that they're doing if you're not already doing that. So here we go. One of the questions that I'd like you to see if you can respond to is, looking back a year ago, what kinds of changes have you seen in your teaching practice in your classroom? What's different from, say, this year to now? And we'll start with Clarence. We'll go from the north to the south.
Well, I guess that's only fair, isn't it? I guess looking at changes in my classroom, I don't really think there's been that many changes in the tools. We were blogging last year. We're still using our weblogs. We used wikis last year. We're still using that. We made audio files. We made video files. So really, the kind of tools we're using haven't changed that much. We've added a few new ones, like we're looking at Google Documents and ThinkFree this year, things like that. But what's really changed is just more my understanding of them. I think my pedagogy has changed, and we're making a much more natural use of the tools that we have available. It's connected us a lot better, and our understanding of the possibilities that these tools open up has changed this year. So our tools really haven't changed that much, with a few exceptions. But what's really changed this year is what we use them for, and the kind of things that we're able to use them for, and that's changed quite dramatically in the last year, I think.
And would you say, would it be your opinion then that most teachers would have to follow that same kind of journey where they, you know, are using a lot of the tools, experimenting with, until they really get to the point where you are now, where you can say, okay, now I know, you know, why we do this and how we do this and what makes most sense in different situations?
Well, I think that's probably true. I think, from my experience, I think there's two kinds of people. There's teachers that jump into tools slowly and carefully, using one tool until they've really got it, until they jump into a second one. And that change is incremental and slow and fine. It's perfectly good because those teachers learn how to use the tools carefully as they go. And then there's other people, I think, which is more like I am. I just kind of see a whole bunch of things and jump into them all and fluster around in them and kind of learn to use them all at once. But I think in the end, you come to the same realization that some people move more slowly and learn to use the tools well before acquiring a second one. And some of us just kind of go like a shotgun and kind of figure them all out at once as we can go. So I think that is true.
Okay, Darren, how about you? What's changed in a 1 year? And again, just to keep in mind that it wasn't like all of you just started using these tools a year ago. You're well into your second and probably third year. So what's different, though, between this year and last year?
Yeah, you're right. I'm into a third year now. And like Clarence says, you know, the major tools, the way we use blogs, the way we use wikis, or not the way, but we do use blogs and wikis, and that stuff hasn't changed. We play with other tools, you know, little knobs and twiddly bits, things like we try the Yak Pack, walkie-talkie, and that didn't work. That just a blog is just not a place where people come to talk synchronously. So I just recently added answer tips to all my blogs, which really, I feel, drenches the blog with content. Like now every word is clickable and something you can learn from, which is kind of neat. I often used to link to words that if I wasn't sure if the kids would understand the word, or they might not even know how to pronounce it, so I would link to a source on a dictionary somewhere, or sometimes Wikipedia. But now with answer tips, they just double-click on the word. It actually speaks the word to them so they hear it and how it's pronounced. Gives a definition with the links to further sources, which is just wonderful. I'm rambling a little bit. The scribe post has changed dramatically, actually, in the last couple of months because we got a smart board, and that's really turned the classroom on its ear. Getting a smart board has really, really changed my the way I work in the classroom. I've been reading with Clarence, obviously, I've been reading Clarence's blog regularly, and he talks about the classroom as studio, and I've been listening to every podcast I can get my hands on with John Seeley Brown, and he also talks about Atelier Learning. And that actually comes out of a conversation Clarence and George Siemens and I had just in January. And anyways, I'm finding I'm doing a lot of prep in advance. The kids are doing much more work in class than ever I've done, than ever they've done before. I'm finding also I'm doing less mathematics in class. My instruction is much more terse, and the kids get engaged and involved much more quickly. The kids are doing more work. Like, to me, to go up to the board and solve a problem feels like an unusual thing, whereas before it used to be common. Now it's much more common that it's different kids going up. And just the other day, I was trying to see if I could get a kid who hadn't been up at the board yet to use the smart board. And we kind of went around the class and we realized, no, everyone's been up there several times, which is kind of a nice feeling. So the level of engagement has really gone up.
So maybe just pick up on that a little bit. Is it solely because of, you know, something like a smart board that is maybe putting you in a different situation as a teacher and you're doing less work? Or what else is happening that you are putting more responsibility on the kids for not only learning but teaching?
Well, that's a really good question, because I really kind of emphasize to the kids that they have to do the teaching. Like, in order to learn something well and learn something deeply, we don't learn anything really. Let me backtrack. We learn that best which we teach. And the kids, I'm trying to get my kids to take on that role of teacher more and more. So I guess what's different this year is I've kind of thrown my kids every tool imaginable, put together a wiki with Chris Harbeck, and we dumped in there every conceivable online tool that we could think of that kids might use in the creation of scribe posts. And now we're using it in the creation of their projects. And in my case, I call it developing expert voices, where the kids have to create four different problems that span a minimum of one or more units that illustrate their mastery of mathematics. And they choose the content, they choose the deadline, they get to pick their own date. We put that on the class blog. And there's a little calendar there, so that everybody's deadline is up there, and there's a constant reminder. And they also choose their manner of presentation. They had to publish their stuff online, and it had to be written in such a way so that it would educate an interested learner. You know what? As I'm talking about this, it occurs to me what's changed is the way we use the blog. It's come to be more a matter of course. It's not a special thing anymore. It's just a very normal part of our everyday experience. I want to get something out to the class, I'll just put it on the blog. I want to do a survey to the class, we'll just put it on the blog. The smart board has made it easy to do the kind of stuff that Clarence and Kathy do. When they take the kids' writing and highlight it in the main blog, that's been very difficult for me because we all share a single blog. And I can talk about it in class, but now with the smart board, I can also show it to them. And say, like, this is exemplary work, this is an exemplary reflection, this is an exemplary scribe post, this bit here is what's really good. And I try to focus on the positive, not so much talk about the stuff I don't like as I do talk about the stuff I do like, and the kids pick up on that. Try to do more of that.
Okay. And finally, Kathy, what's different?
Well, I think that I'm the slow, careful type that Clarence was talking about. I try to figure out one thing first. And so for me, it was the blogs first, and then I dabbled in wikis last school year. And then this year, we've used them a lot more. We've continued to podcast, and that's maybe been a little bit more purposeful and a little more curriculum-oriented this year. But it's really the wikis, I think, that I've shifted more into. We've done one with a lot of different areas of the curriculum, and it's been very positive. In fact, my kids sort of just see it as a normal part of life. And we've had more connections with other classes this year, and that's been really positive too. They sort of view these kids as just sort of like next door, and oh well, why can't we just talk to them whenever we want to. And whenever I open up the blog in front of them, they say, oh, someone else is on the Yak Pack. Let's check and see who they are. Let's try to talk to them. it's really, there's been a lot of really great things happen this year. But it's almost a blasé thing to them, especially the kids who've been in my class last year, that the New Zealand kids, well, that's not really a big deal anymore. They want somebody else. Well, let's try somebody in Wales or something like that. So...
Kathy,
go ahead.
Does anybody talk back to you when you click on the Yak Pack? Have you ever had any conversations with someone?
Yeah, I had. When we initially got it, actually one time I had a four-way conversation with a teacher in Wales, a teacher in Florida, and the teacher in New Zealand and myself one afternoon. And that was pretty cool.
With your class? Your class was there too?
Yeah, my class wasn't. Now, their classes weren't. But my class was, and they were very enamored of this. They thought it was great. Wow. And they would just come walking by my desk, oh, Mrs. Cassidy, somebody else is there. They'd be so excited about it. They'd hear a voice, and so we'd have to go back and see who it was. The first time I was trying it out, I knew there was someone else there because you can tell by the little number in the bottom corner that someone else is there. And so every once in a while I'd say, is somebody there? Finally, I got an email from a lady who's in North Battleford saying, Kathy, I keep hearing this disembodied voice talking. Is that you? And it was. So, yeah, that has happened. So I don't do it a lot because of that whole disembodied voice thing anymore.
That's a little weird here.
That's so, really cool.
Yeah, it is. It is. You talk about being blasé and everything, and of course, for us that have had the opportunity to create all these connections, I mean, there's part of me that is still in awe of how this all works. But on the other hand, you know, there's nothing to it. And as an example, I posted the other day about, and I had read about that Shane's Wish thing, right? So, mm-hmm. And I know that Darren replied on there saying that their school had done some stuff, and I emailed you know, all these teachers in our division that I thought might be useful. And Kathy says, well, you know, been there, done that. Like, we've already sent these away. It's such a good idea. And then I got another email from, it must be your blog buddy from New Zealand, Jody Hayes.
Yes,
she goes on my blog and said, yeah, what a good idea. We've all done this too. Like, it just seems like, it just works so well. There's such an interconnectivity with our community of learners, and the connections that we made are just powerful. I'm really enjoying some of the tools that display this. What's the one? And I don't know. Maybe it was Darren that had it on his Delish. I don't even know where I got it. Is it Walk to Web? Or is that you, Clarence?
Yeah, like
that? That's not me.
It was on Twitter. Someone put that up on Twitter.
But basically,
I don't remember who.
This Walk to Web, you just put in a website, and it just, you know, there's similar tools that do it. It just does it in a very interesting visual of, you know, showing with this blog, connecting to that blog, to this blog, and then you get a little screenshot in the corner of the various, well, they're not necessarily blogs or whatever the links are, and then it continues to build this visual of the connected the connectivity of the various classrooms, or not classrooms, but websites. So it's
a little better than TouchGraph.
Yeah, it just kind of brings it. So it's really,
it's kind of neat this thing you're talking about with Shane, because it's interesting that it kind of taps into, well, let's say Kathy. Right, Kathy, your class has written those letters to Shane, and then people that you're friends with in New Zealand find out from you, perhaps, or however it is. But once, you know, one of us finds out, it literally begins to span the globe.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
true.
Something that could be like a real. This is like this whole thing with Shane's wish. This is like a really powerful event, and it's interesting how the edubloggers. I really spread this far and wide so quickly. That kind of stuff amazes me.
You know, the blogosphere is really good, but I first heard about it at my gym, and a girl in my class had seen a poster about it, so it's not just in the blogosphere.
Oh, yeah.
No, but it's interesting how quickly that you can connect all these people, like New Zealand, England, Scotland, Australia, the U.S., Canada, all over. With just a couple of short links, like Dean, like there's no predicting how far reaching your post has gone.
And then like I said though, the interesting thing is sort of this balance between, the fact that we do this every day in our classrooms, our kids are doing this every day, and we got grade ones who think nothing of it, and yet you've got teachers who, to them, this is just. It's outer world kind of stuff. They can't even fathom how this all works together because they have. And so I guess that's part of our goal is to bridge these gaps between people. And while we want them to be excited about the possibilities, make them realize it's pretty straightforward in some ways. And so maybe that leads me into my next question. What are your experiences? Positive and negative, I know this isn't your job, but it is in some ways in helping teachers to understand what this world of connectivity can bring to their teaching. So think of a success you've had, and maybe think of some other things that have frustrated you with that. We'll start with Kathy and go back up to Clarence.
I was hoping I couldn't have to go first on this one. I can't think of anyone that's just a smashing success, but there are people who are taking small steps and moving along. And, you know, they're saying, I want to get blogging. And the lady that I helped this morning, you know, she had been to a blogging workshop I did back in January. And now she's finally at the place where she feels like she's ready to start that. And so she has two of her grade 9 English classes started in it. You know, I think it's small successes with people, and I think it has to sort of be a one-on-one thing, because the people, you can't just really go to a workshop and do it. I don't think I could have done that. I think you have to have somebody help you along and support you and say, yeah, oh yeah, this is how you put a picture on, or oh yeah, this is how you approve that comment. And so it's a slow process because I think it requires that.
And so,
at least the people I know.
Where have you seen that has been, so would you say the frustrating part is that people don't catch on right away, or what would be an example of something that says, boy, that was disappointing. I wish people would have, I don't know.
Well, I guess I wish that more people would see how exciting and effective it is. You know, it's frustrating that that everybody doesn't want to be connected and doesn't see the benefits of inviting the rest of the world into your classroom. I was frustrated about that today, as you know, and I'd like to see that happen more with primary and secondary kids.
Okay, well, I'll go right up north and back to Clarence.
Well, I think Kathy hit it right on the head that I think a lot of this, it seems to me that a lot of change isn't coming from in-services, or a lot of change isn't coming from a big, talking in front of a gathering of 100 people. A lot of the change is happening slowly and quietly, and through email. Like, I know that I probably get anywhere in the range of a dozen to 20 emails a day from different teachers that could be anywhere, you know, and 99% of them are from people, who I will probably never meet, never have met, and it's people who have read the blog or have seen some of the work I've done with my kids, and now they're sending just an email asking, could be something specific. It might be, about a specific tool or how to use this or how did you do that. But it may be more just a general, I'm really interested in this and how do I get started? And that's what a lot of it seems to be. I mean, it seems to be mentoring very quietly, there's no showboating about it. And that seems to me where the biggest changes are happening. It's much slower, obviously, than being able to talk to an audience of 500 people and having them all go back and set up their own blogs and do their thing. But I know in my experience, the changes that I've seen with other people have been like that. Whereas whenever I've gone to talk to a group of people, and you might get one or two emails back, maybe half a dozen tops, but this other way, slow and steady, quiet in behind the scenes, seems to be where the most success is.
It's interesting. I've done a few now, adult technology sessions for some of our community associations, and I just finished one last week on digital photography. And it's a typical crowd of, an average age of probably 60 or 65. I mean, these are seniors who are just excited about it. They've got this digital camera. They have no idea really what to do with it. And so over three evenings, we kind of, walk them through a number of things they can be doing and kind of going that. But, I've been honest with people, and I've done it now. I did it at a blogging workshop. I did it at a conference last week. And I said, this is fine that we can come and learn this and have this opportunity. He says, but you know what you really need is you need a buddy. You need to find somebody. And I told this to the seniors. I said, whether it's your son or your daughter or your neighbor, whoever, grandkid, that you can call and say, I'm stuck, I need help. And I said, with the blogging teachers as well, I said, you can set up a blog. It's not rocket science to do that, but you do need to have somebody that you can always, call to and when you get stuck. And there's that side of it, but I guess there's also that side of it of teachers that where it's not really, it isn't a technical challenge for them. It's a pedagogical challenge, and that's where when you said, Kathy, about wanting teachers to see the value in it, we have to always provide that balance of here's how you do it, but more importantly, here's why you do it kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
Darren?
Yeah, the blogging thing, I think it's a real shift in attitude I think it can be really intimidating because it's, for me, blogging with my students is turning a lot of the control over to my students, trying to empower them to pursue learning at their own, on their own, to be self-motivated learners. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably one of the biggest hurdles. Like, many teachers are kind of comfortable and in control of their classrooms and ordering and organizing the way learning is happening. And the idea of stepping back and letting the kids take more ownership, that could be a little frightening. It's sometimes, I mean, right now with my kids publishing their projects online, it's a little frightening because I don't know what they're publishing until it goes up. And then just yesterday I had to ask a kid to take what he had published down because he had published people's last names and mm-hmm. their faces and, you know, so anyway, he took it down and we're getting that all fixed, but, you know, it was up there briefly.
Yeah.
But anyways, back to the original question, which I think was one success story and one,
maybe
not such a success
yeah.
story about
helping out.
Yeah, I think I gotta agree with Kathy and Clarence. You know, it's almost like there's these little pockets of partnerships that are forming. And like in my school, the science department head was kind of interested in blogs, like since almost a year, just kind of like curious about it, looking at it. Occasionally it would come up, and she was teaching a course at the university. And she decided that would be her experiment. So she came to me to set up the blog, and she had them doing scribe posts, and she was kind of getting her feet wet with that. And now she's doing it with her chemistry class in school, and she got a smart board in her classroom too. So she saw what I was doing with, I save the slides every day, like all the boards that we use are saved as a slideshow and published on slideshare.net and then embedded on the blog. So she saw me do that. She said, well, how did you do that? And I said, well, it's a piece of cake. Do this, 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 boom, boom, boom. And so now she's doing the same thing. I start podcasting my classes, so she's looking at podcasting her classes. So there's this really nice synergy that's happening. And then the kids coming from my class go into her class, and she says, well, how do we do this? And then the kids are showing her, which is really kind of neat. And then they'll come back, and they'll learn something in her class, and they'll show me. That's really wonderful that that's happening. There's another teacher of mine who's doing online projects. Another teacher in my department who's doing online projects, and she's got a couple of class blogs going. There's a few of us. So it's slowly starting to take root, but mostly in the math department. So the stories that are not so successful, they're the kinds of things that just make me shake my head. Like, I don't understand. I have a hard time understanding teachers' reluctance to learn a new pedagogy, to learn a new tool, to something that kids find engaging and motivating. And some teachers actually poo-poo the idea of having a blog. You know, and they'll come into my class and I'll show them and I'll say, well, look what this kid did and look what this kid wrote and look at this. And they're like, wow, wow, wow. But, you know, when it comes down to brass tacks, there's a sense of, well, what I'm doing works and I'm comfortable doing this. And, you know, there's some people just reluctant to even just touch the technology, be it a smart board or a blog or a wiki or anything. I have a wiki that I use to organize my department. So it's just for the teachers. And that's been a bit of a struggle. Even with some technologically hip teachers, they're just not familiar with wikis and they don't want to be. It's the kind of stuff that just makes you shake your head. Like I don't understand. I know I'm passionate about it, enthusiastic about it, and I don't understand the negativity. I understand the fear. And I understand the learning curve, but I don't understand the unwillingness to make an effort to get over those hurdles.
Well, I really think that maybe Clarence touched on it before, that it's more than anything else. It's a shift of control from teachers that I think is the most fearful. But here's my question: is okay. in Kathy's situation, we're talking about primary age students that need high levels of structure and guidance. Maybe they do. I don't know. At sort of what age, or is this a gradual process, or is this start from day one where we allow kids to take control of their learning, and how do we, is that something we start right off the bat, or is there a time in their education where now all of a sudden they're asked to take control of their learning? Because I think if it's a cutoff break, I think that's quite a transition for kids. So I'm not sure. Maybe Clarence, again, being that you're in the middle of this, do you kind of see this from both ends? Like, is this something that kids need to be taught right from the start, or do we gradually move into ownership of learning, or how does that work?
Well, I think it is. I have a big problem in my classroom with kids that come and they have a tough time transitioning into the kind of learning that I want them to do in my classroom. Because they're used to being spoon-fed a lot of stuff, when you suddenly want them to do a lot of independent work and discovery work, and you want them to, work in a studio environment where they're expected to, not completely independently by any stretch, but they're expected to organize their time and organize their research and process towards heading to some kind of an internationally collaborative product. I mean, that's not an easy transition, obviously. But when kids are not used to that type of work in classrooms where they're basically just used to getting reams of worksheets, well, that's a drastic change, and it's difficult for them. And so I think it does need to be something that happens gradually, but that being said, I think it's something that needs to happen early, and it's something that needs to be grown in kids all the way through. Like, there's certainly no reason, kids in kindergarten, grade one, they have more curiosity than any of us do. And it almost seems to me that by the time kids get to middle school, we've knocked all the creativity out of them. We've done a wonderful job at doing that. It's something, as the teachers, obviously we are the ultimate authority, the ultimate control, and it's our responsibility. We're accountable to ensure that these kids learn the things that, basically that the state is requiring that they learn. But there's a lot of ways to do that. And it doesn't mean that we all need to be in lockstep motion on page 83 on the workbook. And it needs to happen at every grade and every subject. That being said, that doesn't mean the kids have free rein and they get to do what they want. There has to be a balancing act involved in there, someplace.
So, Kathy, how would you say that your kids are independent learners or take charge of their learning in grade one?
Well, I've really thought actually quite a bit about that this year and tried to move towards that. There's a couple of things that Clarence didn't mention that I think are significant in the fact. First of all, is because they're so young, they need more protecting because they haven't got the knowledge yet to protect themselves. And the second thing is they really can't read yet enough to do a lot of finding out stuff on their own. So the ways that I've moved towards that is saying, okay, grade ones are expected to know this by the end of the year. Let's think about what things you already can do, what things do you need to know how to do. And your goal is going to be to learn those things that you think you still need to know. And we started that with math first, because math's very easy that you know exactly what you're supposed to have. And we do have a way with reading as well. And so that was my way of starting, saying, okay, this is where you want to be. We want to make sure you get there. What are some ways now that you can get there? What do you think you should be doing to get there? That's as far as I've gotten in that, along that journey. But I certainly have lots of ways to go.
Well, one of the things, I guess, that I, when you said that you've done that I've used as an example is your kids have podcasted. In fact, here's what I need to learn. They've identified things, and again, as Clarence mentioned, that there's that balance between what would you like to learn, and here's what you need to learn, and how do we bridge these two things together?
Right.
Darren,
right.
What are your thoughts on that? I mean, you've kind of talked about how you've made the shift of having kids take charge of their learning as well. So how do you see the balance there?
Well, I think it's more of a struggle than a balance. Kids come into my classroom, and I don't think my classroom is very much different from any others in this way. And I think they view education as something that happens to them, not something that they do. And they kind of come in and they're like, I'm here, teach me. And there's this very passive, receptive, not always receptive, but they're kind of like, they're waiting for me to instruct them. They feel that what they learn and how well they learn it is really dependent upon me as their teacher. And I struggle with them all year long to say, no. You know, how you learn is dependent entirely on you. And if you have a teacher that you connect with or that you find is easy to understand, then that's a great bonus. But sometimes you got to be able to teach yourself stuff in spite of the teacher. And I think sometimes when I'm teaching, I will say things that are wrong. And I'll say it in a very natural, matter-of-course way, hoping against hope that someone's going to stop me. And usually, you know, if I don't let it go too far, if they don't catch it, then I'll rewind. But kids eventually pick up on that, and I say, or sometimes they'll say to me, so Mr. K, is this right? And I say, well, why do you think it's wrong? Or I'll say, well, what do you think? And they say, well, I don't know. I say, well, you think you've made a mistake? Is that why you're asking me? And we'll go into this whole conversation and trying, you know, one kid at a time, trying to get them to see that you've got to learn how to verify your work and check it against, you know, what the answer should be and have procedures and processes to make estimations and educated guesses to figure this stuff out for yourself. Anyways, I don't know if this is a terribly coherent reply, but ultimately, I still feel kids are coming into class and I'm trying to push them, drag them, pull them, cajole them, coerce them into being self-motivated learners and taking charge of their own education. But they arrive in my classroom, by and large, waiting.
No, I think that's such a big thing is that we've got, you know, and Clarence mentioned before about somewhere along the line, we've done this great job of sucking creativity and the expectation for kids to be their own learners. But I guess what I would, you know, I certainly argue in your defense, Darren, is the fact that, you know, that you're making them be teachers of the content and sharing that and you know, putting in that light, at least at that stage. Whether or not they're independent learners, they're still having to, I guess, be independent teachers, maybe, in a sense.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I get to, around this point in the semester, as we approach to the end, and it's very comfortable. Like, the kids are more engaged. There's less pushing on my part that I have to do. And the kids know that, you know, when I ask a question, I will stand there for 5 minutes in silence waiting for them to answer if that's what it takes. So there's more energy in the room and the kids do sort of begin to take more ownership and they also feel more comfortable sharing their mistakes, which is a huge hurdle for them. Kids really don't want to be wrong in front of their peers. And it's so important that they are because that's where the real learning happens, by seeing others' mistakes.
Let's take that thought and I'll just continue with you, Darren, then pass it to the other two. You've all touched on this a little bit, but it's more directly. How does the nature of being global classrooms, the fact that you all have other classrooms and other people who are looking in on the work that your kids are doing, how does that impact the way the kids themselves respond and learn in your classrooms?
In my case, it's mostly through mentors that they have that, you know, the people that I invite in to comment to the kids on their work as they're doing it. I think Kathy and Clarence are probably more globally connected than I am in terms of the work that the kids are doing. But yeah, definitely, it, you know, when someone from outside the school leaves motivating comments or asks questions about what the kids are learning, they're more motivated to reply to them and to learn whatever else they need to learn in order to answer those questions adequately.
But your kids, though, I mean, you might say, you know, you talk about that the mentorship thing as being the only connectivity. I mean, I hope your kids know that your classroom blogs are being used as examples of great work all over the place. And so I hope they know that, and maybe they in light respond that
Thanks.
Way.
When I find out about it, I share it back with the kids. If someone mentions it or someone talks about something a kid wrote in a workshop somewhere, and I'll bring it up in class. I know, like, Julie Lindsay did a workshop, I think it was in Germany not too long ago, and she mentioned one of my classes in their blog. And so I brought that up in class and say, you know, look, you guys were being discussed in Germany. And that's kind of really eye-opening for them.
And as you well know, you know, we are really seeing some excellent work in our high schools, particularly in the math and science level, largely because of the work that you've done and the time you've spent talking to our teachers and them observing what you're doing. And so your kids really do become, you know, models of what effective pedagogy can look like, and especially, I guess, I mean, one of the niches I think you have is that, again, typically mathematics is not seen as the type of subject area that some of the stuff doesn't, for a lot of people, seem very natural because it's not as communicative as other areas, but you've certainly helped make that look, at least show people what it looks like, so...
Thanks, because I think mathematics is really all about communication.
Yeah.
But you got to send me the links.
I will, and I'll put them in the show notes. I'll put them in the show notes. And one of the key ideas that what your work has done for some of our teachers is simply the idea of kids taking charge of their learning. We've got a grade 9 science teacher who has her kids post their science labs to YouTube and on their blog every day. And
wow.
And has their kids. Her kids are now doing the blogging, and she is relinquishing control of that for them to, they're learning. I mean, their scribe posts aren't quite as in depth as yours, but again, I mean, you've been at this for quite a while, and so she's really excited. Mm-hmm. And it's one particular teacher, and is really working in her staff to try to develop this, and it's really catching on. So that's,
she's publishing on YouTube every day.
Almost every day. You know what she uses?
That's
she uses
amazing.
Her little digital camera. The kids are doing it. She's got an account, and they just log in and they post, and they talk about what, you know, why this, you know, they look at everyday examples of what is a better in terms of a science lab. What's better? What's worse? How do you make this better? And that's their course content is their videos of their labs. A lot of it. So. Anyways,
Are the kids' videos changing over time as they, you know,
they're
like,
improving,
are they
yes.
adding detail?
Yeah. Yes, yeah, and just in terms of, you know, just, you know, technique around, you know, how to shoot a good video. But she's just using her little digital camera, not even a video camera, you know, just the video. So, I mean, she's just using the tools that she's got
That's
has
amazing.
Handy and, you know, and she's just making it work. So, and they're really now looking into implementing the smart board technology. I mean, we've had smart boards around for a while, but it just seems it's interesting how it's sort of reviving itself as a potential tool. So, Clarence, what about your kids? You've done this, the international team project and other things. How do they see the global learning part as part of their education?
Well, I think I've posted a few times before on my blog that my kids are constantly amazed that they have an international audience. When we just look at the stuff with the International Teen Life Project, for example, I mean, their stuff has been downloaded several thousand times in the last month, probably. And there was quite a controversy that was stirred up because I ended up censoring some of the stuff that the kids had made. And that, of course, raised a controversy in the classroom, on the wiki, and on the blog. I mean, it was every place. So they're constantly wondering about that because they're wondering about who would be interested in the stuff they produce. And quite often, their idea is that, well, people must be downloading this stuff to use as bad examples. You know, that's what they can figure that people must be using their stuff for. But it's really turned into, it was interesting listening to Kathy earlier talk about her grade one, you know, getting blasé. And I don't want to say that the kids are blasé, but they really look at an international connection as basically being the way that education is conducted in our classroom. You know, like Darren said earlier as well, I mean, it's, they come looking to be filled up. You know, they see school as a place where they come and get to be receptors, and the teacher fills them, and it's hard to break them out of that model. But when you can do it, you know, the kids see it as really valuable, and the kids do see the value in doing things in a different way, but they almost begin to take it for granted. And I wonder, I posted something earlier this spring on my blog about how there's getting to be a growing gap almost in what education is meaning in different classrooms. And I'm wondering if we're almost losing a common language to speak when we look at classrooms that are involved with global projects and connections and Skype and Wiki and blogs. Not just the technical terms, but is education starting to mean, you know, a completely different thing to a teacher involved with these kinds of projects compared to a teacher who's not? And it's almost a digital divide issue, but it's an issue of digital divide to do with what education means rather than with access.
That's a great point, and I think, and again, I think people have touched on this from time to time, that the real revolution will come from kids, and it's kids who have had exposure to these learning environments and classrooms like yourselves that are going to come away from this at some point and say, you know, we could be learning this so much better and so much more richer in other ways, and wondering why aren't we doing these kinds of things in our classrooms. And so I think at this point, I don't think it's happening because, as Darren mentioned, they're just coming so many times expecting the teacher to do everything, and they're it's out of their comfort zone to take the initiative for learning. In many cases, they've never had that experience, and so when a teacher like yourself requires them to do that, it's foreign territory. But I think a day will come in the not too distant future where the students will say, you know, this is, you know, I mean the Prenskys and those folks are saying that time is here. I'm not so sure it is, and I know Darren and you have issues with some of the digital divide theories that he poses, and that's true. But I do think there will come. I think that time will come. So
one thing,
go ahead.
I just got to say this, Clarence, you got to take this back to your kids. When I was talking to the Manitoba Librarians Conference just last week, the International Teen Life Project is one of the things that I talked about as probably the best, most powerful, most innovative and meaningful international collaborative projects out there. Like, it's just what your kids are doing, that whole International Teen Life Project, I think is one of the most powerful international collaborative projects that's around. Like, the content that your kids are wrestling with is just unbelievable for kids in grade 7 and 8. And they're producing such phenomenal work.
And it was, you know, I have to say that it was, I mean, it was an extremely complex task for the kids to tackle. And I've never seen kids work at, for an extended period of time. I mean, you're looking at, I mean, 5-6 weeks steady. You know, never mind all the research and the background work and things that have been going on since Christmas, really. Mm-hmm. But just to produce the product itself, you know, that's 5-6 weeks of very high level, very intense work with kids. I mean, you're looking at blogging, wikis, Google Documents, video editing, you know, YouTube, still photography, everything, all in one piece. So it was an incredibly complex process that really, I think, in the end, really did pay off. I mean, I'm very impressed with the stuff that the kids managed to produce. It was very well done, I think, a lot of it.
Like, I really think it's the best international project going on right now.
Thank you.
Kathy, do you want to just, do you have anything to chime in on that idea of, I mean, you've touched on it before about global, this global citizenship.
Right. And maybe blasé wasn't the word to use, but they're just not amazed. I think that they haven't had enough school experience to know that's
a
not.
A time will come when school will be blasé.
Well, that this is not the norm,
yeah.
that everybody isn't connected. And so they just, for them, it's part of their life, and maybe for them it will be. That's what I hope for them. You know, when we decided we wanted to know what 1,000 looked like, and we wanted to collect 1,000 names, and so we put up this wiki, and I talked about it on my blog, and people came and put their names, and honestly, I was not expecting to get 1,000 names this year, but in 3.5 months, we had 1,000 people who took the time to put their name on our wiki, and they thought that was very cool. They kept expecting that there was going to be, and it was for them. And when we have, you know, they just expect that people are going to come and contact and comment on their blogs. We had mentors from the university this year, from a university education writing class, who commented on their blogs, and they thought that was great that somebody was, but they thought, well, that's what happens. People comment on your blogs. They feel very secure and confident in themselves as writers because they have that support from the outside community. They really feel like they're part of the world, and you know, they know about New Zealand, and they know some things about other classrooms in New Hampshire because we have these connections with them.
Okay, I've got two more questions for sure, and then you guys can decide if that's enough for you. First question is, if you, and I'll steal this one from Ian Jukes. If you're king, or in Kathy's case, queen for a day, what would you do? I mean, if you could say, here's what we're going to do in education, here's what we're going to do in our school division, this is what we're doing. King for a day, queen for a day. What do you do? What changes do you make starting tomorrow?
Is this assuming that everybody would go along with what you said?
Yeah, you're queen. You're queen. So your word is this is what we're doing. I mean, you're looking for sustainability. We're looking for all the things that we think are, you know, will actually make a difference. So keep that in mind the way you answer it. So I'll let whoever's ready jump in on that one.
Wow.
Well, I'm going to jump in. If I'm king for a day, I'm hoping I'm heading in the right direction. if I'm king for a day, I'm starting at the level of classrooms, not really schools, because I think a school obviously is more than just a collection of classrooms. But if you want to see real significant change in how kids learn, that happens when those kids get together in that classroom with the teacher and spend their time. So I'm looking for change to happen at the classroom level. It needs to obviously be supported by the school and by the administration and in a larger culture of learning. But I'm looking in classrooms. And if I'm also king for a day, I'm hoping that I'm headed in the right direction with what I'm planning for next year, which is the idea of kind of going beyond this idea of a project and looking at this international collaboration becoming just part of our daily life. I'm hooking up with a school in Los Angeles, a small Catholic school, and we're looking at doing about 25% of our day together. Now, how we're going to do that, we haven't quite got that figured out yet, but we're looking at like webcams and just live Skype, I mean, leaving Skype running. If we've kind of got this vision, for example, if you could have laptops with webcams where you could have like kids sitting around in Snow Lake here discussing a chapter that they've read out of a book, and the third member of their group, you know, is that kid on the laptop screen who's sitting in Los Angeles. And it just becomes such a daily occurrence that that kid is just part of their group. You know, we're calling it virtual team teaching, where we're hooking classrooms together now for, you know, for all year, but as an extended part of each and every day. So if I'm being king for a day, I'm making something like that happen, where we go beyond the idea of the global collaboration and the global projects being like a special event, and making it just part of the way that education happens, where kids have that connection and where they have that opportunity to learn with and work with other people, no matter where they're located around the globe, but daily, where you're hooked together and this is a reality, not just something that we choose to do, you know, once in a blue moon because it's a special event.
Wow, you're hired.
I'll get off the throne now.
You're hired. It'd be hard to tumble you down. I don't know, Darren, Kathy, what do you got?
Yeah, he's the king, all right.
Yeah. Long live the king. I don't know. My first reaction was, you know, I would. There's a tension here because what I'd like to see is maybe every teacher have a blog where all they do is, and I think you've heard me say this before, just once a week, publish, you know, take 15, 20 minutes and publish something about what you're doing in your classroom. That's it. Just do that. You know, mandate that for all the teachers to do that, and say in September or wherever the school year starts. And then watch how that evolves over the course of a year as teachers become more comfortable and confident using the tool and see the great variety of things that they can bring in to do that. Of course, the other side of the tension, I think that's kind of a doable model. I think that's something that has potential. But the other side of that drags it down a bit is when you're dealing with teachers that have it's not that they're disinterested, but they have antipathy to the idea of using the technology, then that becomes a self-defeating thing. It's not going to take off. And I was talking to someone just last week, and they were saying how they were at a conference, and the keynote speaker opened with this line. He said, "Everyone's boring until you scratch their passion." So I think what would be nice, if I was king, what I'd like to do is to have every teacher have their own blog where they're going to do that once a week, but also have support. I would also put in place some person or people or team of people that would support them in finding out what it was about teaching their subject that scratches their passion, and help them write about that. Help them, you know, begin by looking at that. And also that, you know, take away all the technological hardships, you know, with a broken network or a problem with a filter, whatever. Put people in place to help them with all of that stuff so the teachers can focus on what they do best, which is teaching.
Okay.
That's my
thing. I don't know, that can be hard to beat too. Okay, Queen.
Well, my first reaction was to get all the teachers blogging, and but it's not the blog itself that is such a fabulous tool. It's the connections it allows, and I think that blogging is the easiest tool with which to make connections, And so I think that's where I would start too. I really like Darren's idea of somebody in place, because the teachers have got to have some support with it. It's great to say that, you know, that they should be learning this themselves and stuff, but it's just not going to happen. So there, you know, I guess if I'm queen, I say, well, there is this money now, and we'll hire people to be the support for them, to help them with the technical things that they need to be able to do that. And blog for the sake of the connections, and then that leads to other things, so that they can make connections with other classrooms, with other people of similar interests, and learn from each other.
Yeah, you know, what do you inevitably hear from teachers when they go to workshops or conferences? I mean, most of them are always excited about the opportunity to network, especially when you're, you know, especially in local situations where people, they have established a form of connection with teachers, but don't do it on a regular basis. So now they're together, and wow, this is so awesome, because now we're connecting, we're talking about the things that we're doing. But as Kathy said, that's what the blog is for. That's what it's designed to do. And those of us who use that on a daily basis, that's our PD. It's funny, because I mean, I went and Kathy, you and I attended a conference a couple weeks ago in Saskatoon that was, you know, for all intents and purposes, a pretty high profile conference in terms of the speakers there and the kind of stuff that was talked about. But I mean, was there anything there, Kathy, that you said, boy, never would have heard of that before, never got that before?
No,
not really. I mean, and that doesn't say because, you know, we're brilliant people. It's just that we do that every day. Like, we're connected to these things every single day. And so, you know, and there were lots of people who came, you know, were in awe of some of the tools they were shown and some of the applications of things that people are doing in their classrooms. But, you know, we're as connected learners, it wasn't anything surprising to me anyways. So, you know, those are all good things to think about. So, last question, and Clarence kind of started us on this journey, but so I'll leave him for last then. But where do you see your classroom in 3 or 5 years from now? Like, think big, or think idealistically about the way, you know, the direction that you've gone in the last year, or two or three, and what's the natural progression as to what you'd like to see. And again, there's obviously you're bound by your departments of learning and things like that and school structure. But again, maybe put those aside. Where do you see the natural progression of your classroom going in 3 to 5 years? Darren, I'll go with you and Kathy, and then finish with Clarence.
It's a tough question. It's really hard to answer too, because things change so quickly.
Yes.
So to look 3 and 5 years in the future, I don't know what it's going to look like, but I know it's going to be different. If I could dream for a minute, there's this very true, I think it's in Carl Fish's video, high school kids comes into class and he has to power down. So, you know, turn off all their electronics and all their connections to the world. Well, I would hope that in 3 to 5 years that kids come into their classrooms and that's when they power up and using their cell phones and smart board and something like Twitter so that we can transparently see what kids are thinking as they're thinking about it live in class, that they're accessing resources maybe with desktop laptops or tablets or something like that, that they're interactively working together in pods around the classroom and at the whiteboard in front of the class, that they move back and forth between conversations and groups, whole class discussions and individualized work seamlessly and naturally, where something like Clarence's vision of having those connections and those collaborations with classrooms in an ongoing basis, that kids are learning the same content at the same time in classes around the world, that you may have a multiplicity of classes working on similar content and learning together. because I think that when kids get connected and when kids find out that there's people outside the four walls of their classroom that are interested in what they're doing and maybe even struggling with some of the same issues that they are, there's something powerfully motivating about that. So 3 to 5 years, come into the classroom, power up.
Clarence?
No, I was supposed to be next.
Oh, I thought you'd... Oh, I'm sorry.
No, Clarence has to finish
because
he's much more powerful speaker
than I. No, he just... Yeah, okay.
I agree with the connectedness, and who knows what tools there will be available to connect in 3 years' time. You can't predict what's going to be around next year. So more connectiveness. I'd like to certainly see having more of a webcam kind of a thing, and I'd love to have laptops in my classroom, and just more connectiveness, as Darren said. That's why I want Clarence to go last. He'll have better things to say.
I think you guys both really have it right, or I think you do anyway. Darren, you said that we don't know what the tools are, and we don't know what the tools will be, and I think that's exactly right. But to be honest, I don't think the tools will matter. I mean, we ourselves have learned over the past several years that, I mean, the tools are very important, and what we do wouldn't be possible without those tools. But you get to the point where the tools really become transparent, where the tools are there to do their job, and that's what the tools are for. So I have absolutely no doubt that the tools will change. The tools may look, for example, we have a big discussion in my class yesterday about Second Life. I know it's been hot, raging all over the education blogosphere. I personally haven't been in. I haven't spent any time there. But I see the possibilities. And I see where that might go. I think when I think about my classroom in 5 years, I think right now I'm looking at it in terms of, like I mentioned earlier, about what we're trying to get set up for next year. That idea of ongoing global connection, ongoing global collaboration. The tools will have to be there to support us, and really I have no doubt that they will be. But what those tools will be, I don't know. But I think if we're screaming hard enough, then the tools will be there. I'm not the one who's going to make them, because that's not my thing. My thing is the pedagogies that support that global collaboration. But when I look at my classroom, and one thing people are constantly amazed at when I go out and give talks at conferences and things, is people always want to say, "Oh, well, you know, that's great, all that stuff, and, you know, your school must have all that money." And then I start saying, well, no, we don't pay for a single thing. I mean, we don't pay for Skype. We don't pay for a blog, a wiki. We just don't pay for it. And I think that will be even more true 5 years from now, that it's just going to be something we are going to expect to be able to do. And it'll be there. It will be there for us. I have little doubt. So I don't know what the tools will be. But I think this year we've learned a lot about what the teaching is going to look like. We've learned a lot this year about what collaboration looks like. We've learned a lot about what innovation looks like, and change and creativity. And we're starting to develop those ideas, I think, in globally connected. So I look 5 years from now, that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for ongoing day-to-day global collaboration where classrooms might pop in and out, you know, through various units. You might have a set of ongoing partners, and there's other people that will come and go through the year. So I think that this year we're seeing the edges of that, and what I'm hoping is 5 years from now, even 3 years from now, that will be daily reality, you know, what we're kind of seeing the three edges of developing this year. That's what I want to see. That's what I want my classroom to be like, and what I want it to be like for the kids in my classroom. you know, 3 years from now, I'm going to say, not five.
Well, certainly I've witnessed the sharpening of pedagogy and the tightening of thought, I guess, in terms of why we're using this thing and why we're doing what we're doing with technology and with learning and this sort of transparency and seamlessness that all of you, three of you anyways, have, if you haven't fully achieved it, are certainly on your way. So I just want to thank you for taking time to chat and share what you're learning. And I know that I continually call on you at various times throughout your days and whatever to share, and that you're so willing to do it. So I appreciate that. And just give you one, if there's a final thought you wanted to share before we close off, I just want to give you an opportunity to do that. Any last words, Kathy?
Nope.
Darren?
Yeah, just sitting in professional developments recently, this is a conversation, I don't know, maybe we were having it before the recording started, but all this stuff is so accessible. Like, you just have to be willing and interested to learn. And if you have the attitude that you're going to continue learning and you want to continually to develop yourself professionally, then you will, and it's easy, and it's accessible, and there's really nothing to it. And more I'm finding formal professional development less and less interesting, because I sit there and saying, well, not only could I have done this better, not only could I have done this by myself, but I could have found better teachers. Because there's all these people out there in the network from across the planet that are willing to help.
Mm-hmm. That's what I've been saying with the idea of professional learning communities, which we've established here, is that that's the question you need to ask. I mean, if there's something that you could do better on your own or without anybody else, then don't call it a professional learning community. Like, you know, take advantage of the people that are out there, you know, be it online or face-to-face, but get at hard questions of teaching and learning and make use of the resources that you have.
Mm-hmm.
Clarence, any final thoughts?
Well, just one very short one, I guess. Well, hopefully, a very short one. And that is that I've been thinking over the last several weeks, actually, looking at closing, you know, heading down into the end of the school year, about 7 weeks to go until exams, I guess, that I think we're here. You know, I used to talk, four or five years ago, talk to other teachers and speak at conferences and talk to people about, well, you know, in the days to come, this is how we're going to do things. Well, I think those days are here. And I think the faster we realize that, the faster we'll begin to realize not only the problems that we face, but the possibilities that are here for us. And we really need to make that happen. You know, I'm very soon getting to the point where I'm going to say that we're doing active harm to the kids in our classroom if we're not working in the ways that are possible, because we're simply closing doors for them. If we don't make things happen in these ways, I'm hesitant to use the word negligent as educators, but I'm on the edge of using it, that if we don't keep pushing, then we are actively harming the kids who are in our care, and it's not about turning them into computer programmers and turning them into, you know, all little code geeks. It's about turning them into active, informed citizens in, you know, an advanced democracy. And we need to take a long, serious, hard look at that, I think.
Well, it's well said. And we'll just leave it at that. And again, thank you, all three of you, for taking the time to talk and share and help us all learn together. So, with that, I bid you all a good night.
Thanks for having me.
Good night. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.